Gretchen Wheels and Dollar School here.
Present.
Hold Hitchcock.
Present.
Niles Pike.
Present.
Seong Kim. Jeffrey Letterman.
Here.
Kathy Lee. Laura Neal.
Present.
Michael O'Donnell. John Purcell. Saad Razak.
Here.
Michael Scully. Jessica Silverman. David Soren.
Holding his proxy, Simone Chan.
Christian Torala.
Present. I have Sion's proxy.
Adam Benson.
Here.
Thor Wagaspack. Jin Ju Wu. Eric Yao. Stephen Singh.
He's no longer a member. Cornell University is located on the traditional homeland of the Gaigahono. The Gaigahono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gaigahono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gaigahono people past and present to these lands and waters. Please review the February 13th meeting minutes.
Representative Acharji is listed as absent. He was here last week.
Any dissent to adding, making that amendment? Seeing none. Approved.
Motion to approve the amended minutes. Well,
is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent? Seeing none. Those amendments are approved. We have no communications this week. Nothing on the consent calendar. Reports of officers, committees, and liaisons.
I said this last week. If you're on the academic policy committee and you haven't filled out the when to meet, please do it as soon as possible. We wanted to meet to have our first meeting of the semester this week, but since only three people have filled out the when to meet, I'm going to give it one more week. So if you're on the committee, please go onto the Slack and fill out the form ASAP. Thank you.
Galperin.
Two things. Number one, we have dining committee meeting coming up at the beginning of next month. If you are not on the listserv and want to be, please speak to me. I remind everyone that there is free food at these meetings. You do not need a meal plan. And wow, that's loud.
Further, Representative Galperin.
On behalf of Representative Geckman, join the Student Health Committee.
We will now move to past announcements, two presentations. We have the campus activities presentation on student activities funding. All of you who are presenting, please come to the front. To give the assembly context, ask campus activity here today because we often have a lot of confusion on alternative funding sources to our own special projects fund. So hopefully this provides that information.
Hey everyone, thank you for having us here today. Sorry, can't talk. So I'm Zach. I'm a senior in the hotel school. Some of you may know me from SAFC last year. I was the co-president throughout my junior year, still involved in SAFC. I joined my freshman year, and now I work for the campus activity student staff along with them.
What's up, guys? I'm also a senior
and a former co-president of SAFC, and I'm working within campus activities along with Zach.
We also have Stephen here. He's one of the co-presidents of SAFC, staff members and representatives from other bylines and sponsor boards. We'll basically kind of just go through this presentation. We have it over there. I'll see it. But we're this is in the Big Red Guidebook Chapter 5, which is pretty much what we're going to be going through today. Look online by the Big Red Guidebook Chapter 5. It pretty much has all the information you need about funding. Big credit to the campus activities staff for putting it together. It really puts a lot of resources in one spot. So if you guys have any questions about funding, it's a great place to look. But we're kind of just going to introduce some stuff today. So
Before you guys keep going, I'm going to ask that assembly members actually take your eyes off of your computers and look at this presentation. Genuinely, this is very important to our operations and to questions that come up at least 3 times a month. Beyond that, is there any way this presentation can be shared with us during or after you give it?
Yeah, I believe this is on, if you go to the Big Red Guidebook Chapter 5, if you just look it up, do you know what?
Okay, we'll be able to find it.
Yeah, it's on the main page of the Big Red Guidebook Chapter 5.
Okay, thank you very much.
We also have that displayed there. Let's get into it. Go to the next slide.
All right, so kicking off this presentation, we're going to quickly cover what a primary funding board is. And to keep you guys entertained, I will not read off the slide, and I'll be doing a little bit of improv. So primary funding boards, we have 3 primary funding boards. That's SAFC, which is what Zach and I used to be a part of. And we also have club sports and interfaith. So these are the large funding boards that receive the majority of money from the student activity fee. We are byline funded, and SAFC is kind of an all-encompassing funding board. So we fund quite a few different types of clubs, and club sports and interfaith, kind of their names are self-explanatory in what they fund. But this is where the bulk of the money is coming from for most of the clubs that we all know and love on campus. And there are other funding sources that I'll let Zach go over.
So moving on to supplemental funding boards. So these are sources of additional funding, and they each kind of contribute to a specific cause or purpose. So for example, CU Tonight is the funding board for, if you're planning night events, I believe their criteria is like, having an event Thursday, Friday, or Saturday night, you can apply for this funding. Alana's Intercultural Programming Board, that basically funds for any person intercultural groups or activities. So all of these supplemental funding boards have some sort of purpose, and in order to get funding from these supplemental funding boards, you have to apply to it, unlike the primary funding boards, which you automatically get assigned, X amount of dollars that you could use from either SAFC, club sports, or interfaith council. So moving on to the next one.
All right, and the last funding source we're going to cover today is departmental funding. So we have a few examples up here for you guys. So these are, as the name suggests, funding coming from different departments affiliated with Cornell. And I think students are likely most familiar with primary and supplementary funding boards to receive money for their clubs, but this is also an option for them.
So you can see on the next slide, this is basically a graphic of all the bylines that the student activities fee funds. So there's department event planning, which is separated into departmental and programming councils, and then event funding, which are the primary and supplemental funding boards. We have a distinction here for the departmental funding groups between offices and departmental student boards. There's no actual distinction in the SA's charter, for example, but we just kind of want to highlight it. Offices are run by faculty and staff, but the departmental student organizations are run by students. And then, you know, programming councils, that's kind of overseen by the Cornell Programming Council, but under that, they get like Student Union Board, Cornell Concert Commission, Slope Day. Those are all within the Cornell Programming Council. And then for event funding, as you mentioned before, primary funding boards, so that's SAFC, Club Sports Council, Interfaith Council, they all kind of operate similarly. And then you have the supplemental funding boards, as we mentioned before, so CUT United, Haven, Alana, and such. And if you see at the bottom, Alana kind of has five different branches. Like for example, they kind of operate the way the Cornell programming does. Cornell Programming Council operates in that there are groups within Alana, so they kind of fund the Black Students Union, the Cornell Asian Pacific Student Unions, and the other groups mentioned there.
All right, so this is a fantastic resource for everyone to get a little bit more knowledge on what we're talking about beyond this presentation. Although I'd like to think this presentation is pretty comprehensive. So this is the Big Red Guidebook. It kind of has all of the funding resources and information that we're talking about here today, in addition to this lovely presentation. And
so you can see on the next slide, it's basically how to access the Universal Funding Guidelines through the Big Red Guidebook. The Universal Funding Guidelines is a set of guidelines that all student organizations need to abide by to get funding. It is basically, it's about two pages of pretty much what they cannot do with their funding, mostly prohibited expenses. This was a big effort in the last, 6 to 7 years. So before all of us were here, some of us maybe in middle school, while Cornell was undergoing this change where it was 27 pages of funding guidelines, and at least for SAFC and other bylines had different rules of what students can and cannot do with their funding. And groups would get funding from SAFC, they would get it from Alana, and they had different rules, and it was a lot of confusion. And those rules were also really confusing because they were 27 pages. But if you look at the funding guidelines now, they're much more streamlined and simplified. And it really gives students the opportunity to be flexible in their funding. There's a lot of opportunities that students have to utilize funding from Cornell. And so it was a big effort in the last, 6 to 7 years, and it has made funding a lot more streamlined and easy. And if you guys get any questions about what students can and cannot do, this is the perfect place of where to look. Pretty much outlines, what is prohibited, and what isn't is usually, accepted.
All right, payment requests. So some of the upperclassmen in the crowd might remember our legacy system in which students were only allowed to request for money at 2 points within the semester. That's not true anymore. The way that students use their money now is by submitting payment requests whenever they spend anything. If that money is spent out of pocket, they can submit a reimbursement. They can get a reimbursement to themselves, another student, or even a department. The other type of payment request is kind of these payments in advance. So in case you don't want to pay for something out of pocket, and there are also specific expenses within our guidelines that prohibit out of pocket expenditures, you're going to submit this type of payment request to get things like speakers paid for in advance, or maybe even like food. If you don't want to pay that out of pocket, we could just fill out a payment request and get those items ordered.
So moving on to the Student Business Office, or SBO. This is a recent change that used to be known as SOBO, the Student Organization Business Office. But essentially, they're going to be working here in person, Willard Street Hall, fourth floor. They have new hours of operation, which you can see there. They also have a help desk for any questions that are for SOBO. But essentially what Student Business Office is the center for processing payment requests. So let's say an organization wants to spend money, they either do it through reimbursement or direct payment. they would submit a payment request on campus groups, and SBO or SOBO would then process that request or for the group to either get reimbursed or, you know, pay a speaker or whatever they need funding for. So it's just good to know that, you know, this organization does exist. They do a lot of, you know, the back end work to get groups their money and their funding. They, you know, transfer funds, they, you know, reimburse students. They do a lot of important work on the back end. It's very important for both students and student leaders to know, you know, kind of work they do. And they will be back in person in Willard Street Hall on the fourth floor. Yeah. And I think that's pretty much all we have today. But yeah, if you guys have any questions for Ash, myself, anyone from campus activities or other funding boards. Yeah.
Thank you guys for the presentation. Representative Galperin.
Hi, thank you for coming by. I wanted to talk briefly about the conditions for funding student organizations. So, by the way, if you don't know the answer, it's totally fine. Based on what I've kind of researched, there's no, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's no mechanism in place to enforce, ensure that students with religious requirements are accommodated in their clubs. I've had many instances, I've heard many instances of like students getting, you know, reprimanded for not attending on a religious holiday. Notable example is I had a friend who on Rosh Hashanah had to leave the synagogue early to attend a club meeting because he didn't have a choice. So have you thought of anything to amend that? Because I'm really not comfortable funding organizations that don't accommodate their members in that sense.
Yeah, no, thank you for asking that question. I think that's a great thing to bring up. So that wouldn't really be overseen by SAFC or any of the funding boards. We do have, you know, that would be more so a broader university policy or maybe the Office of Campus Activities, and I don't know if you join in for that, but that is absolutely something that should be brought up. While SAFC can't just like pull funding for that reason, for those reasons, campus activities or the university can, and SAFC will work to doing to do that in, you know, in light of a situation like that. But that is 100% a point that you should bring up to, you know, the right people who can make those decisions. Yeah.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Representative Al-Mosawi.
So thank you for that presentation. I'm just wondering, so I'm looking at the chart right now. Just a few more specific questions on funding. Like, would you be able to tell us like how much funding do we receive through the student activities fee in total, like on a approximate yearly basis? And if possible, going into like maybe percentages or numbers of like how that money is actually distributed with say like event planning and under that like departmental funding versus like the primary funding boards versus supplementary.
Yeah, I know Zora, you might have this information.
Yeah, so those are determined by us. Like we set the student activity fee and spread out. But if you guys want to answer on behalf of how SAFC operates with those that are under you, that would be a great information to provide.
Yeah, so SAFC is the biggest pilot. I think we receive about a third of the student activities fee. And so we basically have different funding tiers. So each club is assigned anywhere from $500 to $8,000, how much they could get in funding for the academic year. When you become a new club, you start at $500, and you could work your way up by completing a set of requirements. So we do have, if you go to the Big Red Guidebook, Chapter 5, I'm going to mention that a lot, go to the funding track. There's basically a set of requirements that if you complete them, you can move up, you know, to the next funding tier. So if you're at 500, you could then increase to, you know, 1,000, and then you gradually increase to, you know, 2,000, 3,000, all the way up to $8,000. So if you complete these requirements in the funding track, which includes like leadership workshops, which allows, you know, club officers to, you know, understand how to use their funding, understand, you know, how to lead groups, how to, you know, be inclusive. Well, you know, there's so many different workshops that they have every semester that really helps them become better leaders. It also encourages philanthropy and encourages public events. So that makes these clubs eligible for increases in funding. And then on top of that, every primary funding board has a public events fund, or a flex fund. SAFC is a public events fund. Club sports, I believe, is their tournament fund. Interfaith, they just call it their flex fund. But for example, SAFC, if an SAFC group wants to host a public event, they meet certain criteria, like, you know, having like at least 100 people or collaborating with another club, they're eligible for up to an additional $5,000 additional funding. So it kind of works similarly to how supplemental funding works, but it's within the individual primary funding board.
Great, thanks. Are there any further questions? Seeing none. Thank you guys so much for... Okay, Representative Razak has a question.
Hi, thank you for coming. This is just sort of, I don't know if you guys can do anything about this, but I know that this has been an issue this year, which is that like a lot of student organizations like pay for stuff out of pocket, like members pay for it, and they apply for like reimbursement, and sometimes it can take like multiple months. Of course, a lot of students don't have like that kind of money to be like throwing away, even if it is an activity that they value. I don't know if you guys can do anything to like expedite the process or to make it more efficient, but I would like to know if you guys do think you can do something about it, because obviously it's not fair that those students who can afford it are able to, you know, be more involved in campus activities more than students who can't.
Yeah, that's a great point. I really appreciate you bringing that up. So those payment requests are done by student business office, and yes, that there has been, especially over the last 2 years, a delay in reimbursements. From my experience, when I was like the co-president of SAFC, if I had gotten an email that, you know, like a student, you know, I actually remember like she couldn't like purchase a bus ticket to go home for break because she didn't get her reimbursement in time, that was like a situation where I had, you know, as the SAFC co-president, would reach out to student organization business office and say, like, can you put this one up top? Like, the student really needs the money at this time. Obviously, we do have to be fair, because, like, there is a big line of payment requests. You know, there's over 1,000 organizations. So we do have to be fair. But there are certain instances where, you know, students in our position can kind of step in and request that, you know, the student business office does expedite a process for a certain, you know, student where there is a situation that we deem to be fair. That, and at the end of the day, will come down to what the student business office does decide. But, you know, as student leaders, we can try to influence that. I will also say that the student business office has made so many changes over the last few years that some has led to more delays just because of temporary changes. But it all is intended to kind of speed things up in the long term. You know, like I said before, the student business office used to be the student organization's business office. This is just a change as of about a month ago, maybe not even. So there's always changes happening, which can be in the short term bad, but in the long term, it is supposed to make things better. But yes, in the case where a student is struggling to, you know, pay bills or something, that is definitely a case that we could try to expedite things.
Any more questions? Now, seeing none, thank you guys so much for your time. We'll now move to open microphone. The chair will now recognize any community member who wishes to speak at this time. Each community member may speak for up to 3 minutes. You have time in the meetings. You are. You're an ex officio member of the student assembly. Fine. Go for it.
Well, sorry. The reason I'm speaking now is because I have to leave and I can't even vote. So what I really say is just my opinion, just like any other community member at Cornell. Okay. So I came here last meeting. I saw that there was a resolution called approving special projects funding for a club, right, to go to New York City for an event. And I spoke my concerns last meeting because I believe it sets a bad precedent for the future, because at the end of the day, this is a club that is private, has a application process where they actively cut members of the community. So therefore it is not open to the public. The money that they're asking for is the money of the undergraduate student body. So that means the money should be going to the public good, like Slope Day, where everyone has access to that money or to the rewards, like benches and trees and bushes on campus, where everyone can sit down and sit on the bench. Like the pizza right behind me, everyone has access to the pizza because the students pay for the pizza. That's how we justify it, right? I think, and there is the precedent that this has been passed in the past, but I think we set a new precedent as the student assembly to say no to trips, because it makes no sense. I'm in the poker club, okay? It is a public club. That means anyone here is allowed to come to the poker club and come on the trips that we pay for. We're going to Turning Stone next weekend. We need $5,000 for buses, okay? If you pass this resolution, why can I not come with my own resolution from the poker club asking for $5,000? If you pass this resolution, I'm gonna come and ask for $5,000. And will you say no? Will you say yes? If you say no, that's very unfair, right? If I'm on the club soccer team and I'm going to Texas for nationals and I need $5,000, are you gonna give me that money, right? The reality of the situation is that the money that the student assembly governs or manages should be to the benefit of the entire graduate population. We have Annabelle's Grocery, right, that's running out of money, and we're deciding to throw away money to 14 people. It doesn't make any sense. I can't even vote, but that's my spiel.
Thank you, Trustee Swenson. Are there any other members of the public who would like to comment at this time? You have 3 minutes, so begin when you're ready.
Hello, everyone. My name is Adriana Vink. I use she, her pronouns. I'm a sophomore in the ILR school, and we're here today because of a resolution that's on the agenda talking about the university's response to recent threats to the U.S. Department of Education, people may have heard about at the federal level. Like I said, I'm a sophomore in the ILR school, and among many programs potentially on the table if you know, the current administration's executive order targeting you know, race-based or DEI or woke programs is industrial labor relations, since it was created in the 40s, like, to empower labor leaders, and also a bunch of areas where I've taken classes before, African studies, feminist gender and sexuality studies. A lot of clubs that myself and friends of mine are in, including some ILR clubs. There's the ILR Black Student Union. There's the ILR Students Organization. And I just wanted to come and say that I really appreciate that the Student Assembly is considering this resolution and considering taking a stand and telling the Cornell administration that we should not put up with this executive orders that would potentially shut down, like, honestly, a majority of them. Now, if you guys read through this resolution, it's like truly pages and pages of clubs, student organizations, program events, and even entire major programs. Thank you. Very good.
I mean, I think the reason we want to protect them kind of also derives from the fact that these were fought for. I mean, April 18th, 1969 was the Willard Strait Hall takeover. And from the aftermath of this, we received the Africana Studies Department. We've received the black dorm on campus. It was the Latino takeover in 1993, which resulted in transformative change for the Latino community at Cornell. Became the creation of the Latino Living Center, the transformation of the Hispanic American Studies program to the better funded Latino Studies program, an increase in Latino faculty hires. Today, these moments of resistance were memorialized for their profound lasting impacts. I mean, the building we're in memorializes the 1969 takeover right on the front doors. Okay. And these programs are not just symbolic. They have fundamentally reshaped Cornell. I mean, we don't have data from 1969 or 1993, but even from the early 2000s, we saw African-Americans, Hispanics, and Native Americans making up about 10% of the school. Today, we see them making about 20% of the undergraduate student body. These programs have profound changes. Beyond enrollment, many of these programs provide scholarships, fellowships, research opportunities, employment opportunities, and most importantly, for many, a sense of community. This executive order doesn't only threaten minority students, though. But the very foundation of academic excellence at Cornell. We could see devastating cuts to vital departments, the elimination of entire fields of studies, the loss of world-class professors. If Cornell was to follow the federal order in alignment with the new administration, Cornell would lose its core values. Defunding these essential clubs and programs would no longer make Cornell an institution for any person. And the slashing of whole academic fields would make Cornell no longer a university for, of any study. And for these reasons, we support the resolution. Thank you.
Thank you all for your time. Any further? You have 3 minutes. Please begin when you are ready.
Hi, my name is Princess. I'm a senior here at Cornell. And I also wanted to come up to show my support for the resolution to support backing the clubs that would be threatened by the anti-DEI threats to Cornell. As someone who has only been able to bear the 4 years at this school due to the communities being able to find in clubs such as Nigerian Students Association, the Black Students Association, the Pan-African Students Association, organizations such as Collective X, which is targeted for queer and Black and Indigenous people of color. All these spaces make Cornell a livable space. And as a psychology major, I can very strongly attest to the importance of community in terms of mental wellness. So the defunding of these clubs, as well as so many others that provide safe spaces, a sense of community and belonging to so many of the minority communities in this school, would literally deteriorate their abilities to function as students, as well as not even to start to think about the departments and the lack of education that would happen if these apartments are taken away. Access to knowledge is the only way to foster critical thinkers to go into the world. And we also have to recognize threats to knowledge and threats to education are the first threats that come up in the rise of a fascist society. So I think it's our duty, our job, and our right to push back against these and make sure we show support to the fact that we don't accept our knowledge and our rights to be taken away.
Thank you.
Thank you as well for your time. Are there any further community members who wish to speak? Open microphone. Seeing none, we will move to the second reading calendar. We're at 833, University Response, U.S. Department of Education Threats. It will be read.
Before we begin, I just want to mention that the version that you have on the agenda right now is not a fully updated version. The only changes that have been made is that we have six new sponsors. I believe I added a version that's more updated to the box. So Daniel, Holden, Karis, Zora, Nicholas, John have all joined as sponsors. But yeah, I guess I want to talk a little bit about the story behind this resolution. So on the 14th, the acting director, the acting assistant director for the acting assistant secretary for civil rights of the Department of Education, Craig Trainer, an appointee of the Federalist Society, sent a letter to all educational facilities in the United States, basically ordering them, but it was primarily targeted at universities, to comply with this broad ideological mandate that he sort of developed, with the goal of ending DEI. Basically saying that because we have the Supreme Court decision in Students for Fairness Admissions versus Harvard from 2023, essentially you can't have anything that is sort of diversity related for clubs. Basically, he takes sort of having a club for an affinity group or having a program for a group as exclusionary towards all groups that are not within it. And he takes this ruling, which is based on college admissions, and basically says that actually it applies to everything education. So now if it's, it can relate to housing, it can relate to clubs, basically he says if you do not comply with sort of my mandate, then we can cut your sources of funding.
And to clarify, so it's on, the letter was sent out on February 14th, and universities, all educational institutions, were given 2 weeks to comply, or else they would risk losing potential federal funding. One thing that's on this resolution that I just want to like make sure it's kind of said out loud is, so this is really an attack, and it's really a like specific xing or axing of race related things, and so I just want to make sure we define race. Race is defined as a group of people sharing a common cultural, geographical, linguistic, or religious origin or background. And in relation to that definition, and as it is said in that letter, the use of race is cited to be prohibited in, and I quote, decisions pertaining to admissions, hiring, promotion, compensation, financial aid, scholarships, prizes, administrative support, discipline, housing, graduation ceremonies, and all other aspects of student, academic, and campus life. So pretty much any and everything that you are involved with on campus that has anything to do with race or religion or anything like that is essentially being attacked under this letter. And I mean, you can look at all the organizations that are listed in the box, and at least the organizations alone are 3 pages itself, and probably way more than that. And so really passing this resolution has to do with us wanting to make sure that one, Cornell understands where we stand as students and understand that there is no way to support this because it is taking away what is more than a staple of Cornell's ability to be a university and really to show that they actually promote and that they're actually about being an in-person and study-driven institution.
Specific regards to academic programs that could be under threat, we listed a lot of them, and it's not even all of them, and we have 57. Yeah. There's a lot we missed.
I would say also with like the letter as well with the academic programs, the part of that which goes into it, it's basically anything that has to do, really anything with like insinuating that there is like inequality in any aspects, like it's not supposed to be talked about, which like that's literally everything because it's America. So, I mean, we don't have anything to talk about or critically think about. So, again, it's one of those things where it's like, this should not be, it should not exist at an academic institution. At least we should not stand for it by any means whatsoever because we're here to learn, we're here to have challenging viewpoints, we're here to have debates. That's what this is. So, challenge.
Any questions or comments?
Yeah, I don't have much to add. Just want to think about beyond all those clubs, all the social events, all the fraternities, Greek life, all the classes that might be in danger, all the programs that we're in, if we were to remove all these and if all these were in danger, what do we have left as Cornell University? So we would just like the Cornell University to really uphold a standard as anybody, any sense.
So yeah, thank you all, and we'll take any questions.
Representative.
Hi, I have a couple of minor but important amendments. First of all, on line 61, I move to strike Sephardi and Mizrahi Student Council just because it does not fall under that category of academic or professional programs that has been listed under the proper category as well. And then on line 106, let's make sure we correct alpha epsilon pi to alpha epsilon phi. That is a very important distinction. If you want to know why, talk to me later. And I move to approve those two amendments by unanimous consent.
Okay, wait.
Just a couple of amendments to make sure everything is under the right category and to make sure an organization that actually got kicked off campus for good reason is not listed on there.
So moved. Is there a second? Is there dissent? Okay, seeing none, those amendments are approved. Representative Everett.
Thank you all for this resolution. This is very necessary. I was wondering if you all would be partial to a small amendment just to put including but not limited to, just, you know, for any orgs that may not be included. I mean, it's a very comprehensive piece, but you know, just so everyone feels like they're being noticed.
I definitely agree and like fully accept if so passed, like I have.
Motion to make the amendment?
Second. Just including means not.